Refik Peer-to-Peer-Kredite heute live aus der Zentralbank Litauens. Ich sitze hier mit Jekaterina Govina. Sie ist die Head of Innovation and Fintech von der Zentralbank Litauens. Bin sehr geehrt, dass ich heute hier sein darf und wir haben ein kleines Interview vorbereitet, aber ich werde jetzt einfach mal gleich auf Englisch umswitchen. Jekaterina, thank you very much for having me here in this Bank of Lithuania. I feel very honored to be here, to speak with you and see this facility, which is truly amazing. For some compliance reason, I can't film everything here and take pictures, but I'm very thankful that you take some time to answer my questions. Maybe to start off, you work for the Bank of Lithuania in various position already since 2012. How did you get to this position? What's your background, basically?
Hello, everyone. My background is actually I'm a lawyer with some background in economics as well. So I started actually work in Insurance Supervision Commission. So before year 2012, the Bank of Lithuania was only responsible for the supervision of credit institutions, banks and credit unions. And insurance companies were supervised by separate authority. So in 2012, these authorities were merged. So from, it's already 7 years, 8 years almost, when I work for Central Bank. So I started to work in supervision, actually, dealing with consumer complaints about payments, banking, investment services. Then I moved for a bit to licensing, and for recent 3 years I have been working as an advisor to board member, and I was and I'm responsible for our innovation, like internal innovation and external innovation strategy within the Central Bank.
Okay. Thank you very much. In an interview I read, your task is basically to transform the Bank of Lithuania to a very modern and probably the most innovative central bank in Europe. How would you describe your job actually?
Yeah, it's a bit a bit of a challenge, I would say, because we have 600 people at the Bank of Lithuania, the mindset of these people are how to do things in the current way, like our task and my task as head of innovation committee is try to transform actually the current way of work in more efficient way. So as an example, I like practical examples and practical results actually. This summer we organized internal hackathon. At the Central Bank. So we invited people from different departments, from cash management, law division, any economists, people working in payment system area, and we asked them to in one day to create the prototype of robotic process automatization. Okay. So basically, they needed to think of the process that could be automated and to create the prototype of this automatic solution and to pitch it to our colleagues and commission, just to explain how much time and money it could save for Central Bank. And before that, they got practical like training. So in 2 days they were like explained how to use the program, how to think of this process. So as a result, We got more than, I think, 12, it's about from 12 to 15 prototype solutions of robots, basically, yeah. That are partially working already. And now we are working on how we should transform them in fully like working solution. Yeah. So that is just one of the examples how we are trying to train people. Mm-hmm. How to use, you know, a new, more effective way of work, and how we try to create some innovative solutions within the central bank.
Okay, interesting, and thanks for the practical example. Maybe to have a bit more of a holistic view on the Central Bank of Lithuania. Central banks, probably most investors, retail investors, wouldn't know what does a central bank actually do. You probably get that question a lot, but maybe in particular for the Bank of Lithuania, what do you actually do? What is your goal?
Yeah. It's a good, really good question, because in different countries, central bankers are responsible for different functions. Central bank functions that are in traditional sense that they could be understandable. But in Lithuania, we have a bit, I would say, favorable situation, because central bank is responsible not only for central bank tasks, but as well we are like mega regulator of financial market in Lithuania. So we regulate and supervise companies starting from crowdfunding platform operators and ending with insurance and banking industry. So we are like supervising all of financial companies in Lithuania. Mm. And we as well act as ombudsman. So we are the authority which is responsible for resolution of disputes between consumers and financial companies.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, there's a lot of topics on the table for you, I guess. Looking at the Central Bank of Lithuania, what would you say are currently the most important topics that you deal with at this institution?
Me personally, as I work in this innovation and fintech area, so I would say the most challenging project that we run right now is blockchain sandbox. Mm-hmm. So we are doing actually R&D together with such companies as IBM, Tieto. We worked with Deloitte as well in previous phases. So we are developing a blockchain sandbox that would allow fintech companies to create blockchain-based solutions on this platform. Mm-hmm. And we would simulate necessary environment for these solutions, to create necessary nodes, etc. And we would help companies with regulatory and compliance issues. Mm-hmm. So especially for new business models, which do not have this clear legal framework. So we will help to explain be in line with regulation and when the product is born and when it is offered to wider society, that the company would be would be sure that they are compliant with all necessary regulation. Mm. So it's one of the examples that we are working on right now, but there are plenty of others. Regulatory sandbox, regulatory technology or RegTech, SupTech solutions. So we are constantly, changing and looking for new opportunities here.
Yeah. Okay, I really feel the innovation DNA inside you, and now you really blossom with those topics. I also wanted to discuss about the sandbox, but before, just the last organizational question about the Bank of Lithuania. Can you explain in simple terms? Now, you mentioned you have 600 people working for the Bank of Lithuania. How is it structured? How is it organized? What's the kind of hierarchy level? Just to have a broader overview how you're set up, basically.
Yeah, so our structure is it's official and could be found in our website. But just briefly, we have a board, five members, board. Then we have different departments and separate services. So there are four of them. So one is responsible for supervision. And it's the biggest one, actually, in Bank of Lithuania. The second one is responsible for economy and financial stability. So it's like economists working there, forecasting future. The third one is responsible for organizational issues, all of IT, starting from IT and ending with canteen, like issues. And the fourth one is banking service, which is responsible for investment of central bank resources, financial resources. So these are our four main. And then we have cash management. We run payment system at central bank. So our own payment system developed in-house. We have PIS. Lawyers.
PIS?
What do you mean by PIS?
Payment initiation.
I'm talking about infrastructure. So we are running our Centrallink. Yeah. So it's like payment system that is connected to SEPA area and that how money being run through payment system. PIS, payment initiation service, is like service that is being offered by financial companies, payment companies.
And therefore, they need to have this electronic money institution license.
No, payment institution license, actually.
Payment. But isn't it part of the e-money license?
It could be part of electronic money institution can provide payment initiation service, the payment institution can do it as well. So electronic money institution license is higher license, actually, than payment institution license.
Okay. In regards to central banks, what you hear and read most often is like this criticism in terms of independence from the political side, from economy side. You know, they want to make their influence happen on a bigger scale. How do you see that independency in general as concerns central banks, and how do you think it is in Lithuania in particular?
Yeah, I think that it happens once in a while in every country when there is sometimes a clash between central bank and government. Of course, government wants make precise actions actually to put more money in the economy, and maybe it can contradict the goals of central bank. But in Lithuania we have quite clear separation of our government and central bank functions and mandates, so we are not a part of government structure. We are not accountable to government, so we are accountable to our parliament. Sometimes it is some talks trying to influence the central bank decisions, but we are quite lucky. We can handle it in a civil way.
Okay. Then I would like to switch towards more the fintech innovation part, and starting maybe with a more delicate topic, which is in the Baltic countries in recent years there have been a lot of happenings surrounding money laundering, corruption, the closing of ABLV Bank last year in Latvia. I would like to know in terms of risk prevention, how does the Bank of Lithuania try to manage and control risks like fraud, corruption, AML in order to protect consumers?
Yeah, I would say that we are both proactive and reactive. So we are reactive in that sense that due to our like acceleration and our actions that aim at fostering innovations in financial market, we see growing amount of companies in our market. So what we do, we allocate additional resources to our supervision divisions, to our anti-money laundering divisions, to IT, like cybersecurity protections. So it's like, you know, making sure that we grow at the same pace as market grow. And proactive actions, they actually are, we have, again, we have more than 100 people working in supervision area. So we adapt this risk-based approach when we try not to, you know, and we do not have ambition to be near the each company, like, you know, looking at what they are doing, but we are trying to understand where the risks come, and in different period of time, different risks can just arise, and then take necessary actions like on-site inspections, systematic reviews in terms of cybersecurity protection. 2 years ago, we made this cybersecurity test in our banking system to see how our banks are resilient to this IT incidents. Okay. So it was like sort of unique in European Union. We were first to make it. So it's just, again, these are examples of our measures that are aimed at making sure that our country stays actually both in reputational sense and both in resilient sense is a secure country. Yeah. Because we do not want, you know, to become this country that everyone looks and says that, okay, you can do that, anything you would like to do. Yeah.
Follow-up question, what was the outcome of this testing that you have run, and after, how do you personally look at the situation that happened now, especially in Latvia last year with ABLV and kind of, you know, let's say shadow of fraud and corruption that is over the neighbor country?
Yeah, on this cyber resilience test, so we found that our banking system is actually quite resilient and protected. There were some deficiencies in some areas, but that was the possibility to find out what are these, and for banks to make sure that they are protected 100%. Okay, there aren't 100%, but still protected. And on this question on Latvia and everything that happened there, I think that question should be directed to my Latvian counterparts. But still, what we see in the region, what we see in Latvia specifically, in Lithuania, what we do, we see the actually the desire of Baltic region to get rid of this image that we are somehow, you know, being affected of this bad, companies of people coming and trying to put their money in our financial system. Yeah, so it just, you know, we see efforts of Latvian colleagues as well. They are increasing the number of people working in AML staff. They are initiating different projects to make sure that they are resilient. So, yeah, I think that in this sense of our, you know, sometimes we are competing with Latvia, Estonia, like who is, you know, who will attract more players in the market. But in that sense, in risk protection sense, I think that we are like united, and we want as a Baltic region to be protected.
Good message, I think. I heard a lot of good things about you also prior to our meeting, and that you've been really behind also pushing, for instance, with the peer-to-peer lending or the peer-to-peer framework in Lithuania. And I'm sure it's also with many other topics that you're pushing forward. I was wondering, you know, what is the difficulty for you on one side trying to balance this, not, you know, with setting up legal frameworks on one side to protect consumers, yeah, on the other side you don't, you know, foster innovation and, you know, don't want to limit innovation and opportunities that are coming up, especially through digitalization, new business models and everything, you know, better than I do with blockchain and cryptocurrencies. What is the challenge here actually for the Bank of Lithuania finding that right balance, and how do you deal with that?
It's a good question, because when I'm being asked what is the biggest challenge actually working in like this fintech area is like to find this right balance, because when we have people working in supervision, so it's naturally that they are like risk averse people, so they try to make sure that and maybe sometimes over regulate to make sure that they don't allow bad things to happen. For me personally, how I deal with that, I actually am a big fan of behavioral science and behavioral economics, and I actually always trying to find out what is actually our consumers should be protected from, because sometimes we think that if we overregulate, so our customers will be protected, but the reverse could be happen, that our customers won't use these services because of this overregulation. Yeah. So it often helps to find out what is actually the profile of this customer, of consumer of specific financial services, and for example, as an example of this P2P or crowdfunding. So we understand, and what I see from this profile of these investors, that they are actually people who are experienced people. Yeah. It's not like, you know, some, you know, a pensioner from some small village investing through these platforms, but these are people who are a bit experienced, who understand what the risks are in that activity. So it's like, you know, not to apply blindly regulation and some, you know, protection from this protection side, but to make sure that we do not over regulate the services.
Okay, thank you very much. Also for the practical examples, because it would have been my follow-up question. Quick reference to FinTech In. Yesterday was, or the last 2 days was the FinTech In conference here in Vilnius. To quite boldly and frankly, would you consider Lithuania being a FinTech paradise due its circumstances?
I don't like this word paradise, because it has some negative for me, some negative, maybe because of paradise papers or something. I can compare actually, because I was the organizer of first FinTech conference 3 years ago. Or 3.5 years ago. So the first one, actually, we had a really small venue, and we had 150 people there. Yeah. So yesterday we had about 2,000 people attending.
2,300, I asked.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So so the second, okay, if we go through years, the second conference we invited about 800 people. Mm-hmm. The last year we had 1,500, and yeah, yeah, and yeah, yesterday we had more than 2,000. So we are growing fast. So in terms of fintech in, and in terms of our fintech market as well, so we can compare, because each year we make like a survey on that. So now we have more than 200 fintech companies operating in the market. And specifically, if we talk about payment market, so Bank of Lithuania already issued more than 100 licenses for payment institutions and electronic money institutions. And majority of them actually were licensed during the last 3 years. So it's like the consequences of our like our country this active like role in inviting companies in Lithuania. Yeah.
What would you say makes the Lithuanian environment so special for technological innovation and fintech startups?
I think that first of all, this openness of all institution, and it's not only central bank, but our Ministry of Finance, our other agencies, so they are quite open for dialogue with the market, and market appreciates that. They appreciate the possibility to come to have this periodical meetings where they can express their expectations, they can propose some amendments in our law system. Mm-hmm. And we are actually reacting very quickly. What specifically attracts companies to Lithuania, to establish company in Lithuania, it is our payment infrastructure. So I mentioned that we run a payment system, which we allow to connect to non-banks. So electronic money institutions and payment institutions can connect to our payment system. Yeah. And settle euro transactions through us. The second thing is like our licensing process. So we made it as user friendly as we could. So we allow companies to apply for license in English, for example, to apply for license remotely through our website. And we allocated additional people to make sure that our licensing process is as fast as it could be. Yeah. But it, of course, I need to stress that we do not cut corners, and we do not, you know, make procedures less like stringent. Yeah, we are quite severely, you know, checking the backgrounds of the shareholders, managers, and business model.
Yeah, yesterday I think you shared also within the panel discussion that you published also a study that was only available in English, and someone pointed out, hey, come on, we're still the Bank of Lithuania. We can you quickly share that story?
It's about half year ago, we started to develop guidelines for securities token offering process. So we decided to draft them in English only. Yeah. Just, you know, we understand that every company do speak English in Lithuania, which issue STO, and we wanted to be it like more directed to like foreign companies as well. So yeah, we drafted it in English. We wanted to use only English and do not translate it to Lithuania, but we got the letter from our inspection of language, something like that, saying that, okay, Lithuania, we are Lithuania, we have Lithuanian language as official language, so we need still to translate it. So we can publish it in English, but we should make sure that it is a Lithuanian version as well. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I found it very amusing yesterday. Okay, you mentioned already the the blockchain sandbox, but maybe to go a step back, what is the sandbox in general? It's something that also I came across just recently. There was a documentary, Fintech Rise in the UK, and they explained a little bit the sandbox model, and I saw you also have it in Lithuania. Can you explain in simple terms what is a sandbox and what are the benefits of it?
Yeah, it's actually quite similar to the one that UK has, and we are actually partnering with Financial Conduct Authority of UK in running like mutual sandbox tests. Yeah, and the idea behind the sandbox is again practical example, maybe analogy from other sector. It's like drugs tests. When the company that develop drugs, it need to test it with some limited amount of patients or customers in general, whether this drug actually works. So before going to wider market. So the same in finances. We want to make a possibility for companies that develops new innovative business models for them to test it with limited number of real customers before going fully live. So during this period of testing with, let's say, 500 people, so company will check whether their assumptions on the product really work. And we, as a supervisor, we will see how the product actually works, what are the risks involved. And if needed, we can develop during this process, we can develop necessary guidelines, maybe some amendments in our laws to make sure that customers are protected in one side and this business model is allowed to work.
Okay. Consumer loan market in Lithuania, I look at it quite carefully and I see that there's also a big growth from alternative finance companies. Peer-to-peer lending companies being one of them. How do you look at the general development here? And how does the Bank of Lithuania look at it?
I'll try to be as brief as possible, but I'm as I was in the very beginning of development of P2P market in Lithuania, so and I'm actually a bit fan I would say of this method actually of like lending money and deploying actually for investors their money. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Okay, so back in 2015, maybe or 2014, Lithuania had social problems with our consumer or loan sharks, like you know, consumer lending providers, because we saw a lot of examples of irresponsible lending. As a result, we needed to shut down one of the biggest lenders in the market because despite of our actions and sanctions, they continued to issue loans for people who were unemployed, for young people who haven't started working yet. So we made some changes in our law to make sure that we introduce some measures like DTA and some others to make sure that people to protect people actually from this irresponsible borrowing and to protect our market from irresponsible lending from the other side. And actually that was the time when first P2P lending platforms appeared. So for us, it was a task to make sure that all of this irresponsible lending do not appear in this alternative financing. So what we have we done? So we applied the same rules for P2P lending platforms as we apply for consumer lending companies. So no matter if the borrower goes to bank, to consumer lending provider, or to P2P lending platform, so they find the same, like, you know, attitude and the same checks. But on the other side, we acknowledged that the P2P lending is good in that way that it allows actually investors to get the advantages of this lending. So for, as I say, that P2P lending and crowdfunding is a good example of democratizing of financing in some way. Mm. So all of the benefits and profits do not end up in the pocket of one company or a couple of companies, but they can be like spread across the society. So now we have more than 20,000 people that are investing through crowdfunding and P2P platforms. So they get, like, you know, the benefits of participating in the financing market. So yeah, so that's and now we see quite a huge growth of our market. It still could be bigger, actually, I would say. And what we see, actually, we tried to compare what are the interest rates in the banking sector, in the P2P market, mm-hmm. and in this consumer lending market. And the interesting fact is that P2P lending is in the middle. So the it's still for borrowers it is cheaper sometimes to borrow money through P2P platforms than from this consumer lending companies, but of course it's a bit the price is higher than in banking sector. Yeah. So yeah, we see some competitive advantage of introducing the new business models in that area. Mm.
Okay, great. That covers already a couple of questions that I had coming afterwards. Yes, 40% DTI ratio, debt to income ratio. I write what that exactly means right here. We don't need to discuss it right now. Interest rate restriction is 75%. You mentioned, interestingly, that the market could be bigger, in your opinion. I know some lending companies, peer-to-peer lending companies that are kind of want to get rid of the regulation that no institutional investors are allowed to invest in private consumer loans. Why is that, first of all? And secondly, do you think that's something that would change?
Yeah, the idea in the very beginning was to make a possibility for actually retail investors to participate in the market, mm-hmm. and to make sure that it's a real P2P model, yes, yeah. person-to-person model, and not like B2P or, yeah, you know, it's like to make a possibility for a wider society to benefit in participating in this market. But now we understand that we do not have enough, probably, retail investor like base to make sure that our market grows in that sense. Mm. So both the central bank and our Ministry of Finance, we support the idea that institutional investors should be allowed to participate in the platforms to lend money, and we. And now the change amendment of the law is actually in our parliament. The thing is, I want to stress that institutional investors still are allowed to participate in this market, mm-hmm. but they need to have the status of consumer lending provider. So they need necessary permission to do that. Okay. And with this amendment, institutional investors, they will be allowed to participate without that status, and all of the responsibilities of checking this DTI and all the other rules will lay on the platform provider. Mm.
I want to talk about electronic money institution license. We touched a little bit already with the payment system. It's about, you know, segregation of investor funds and company funds. So we had, let's say, in Sweden with TrustBuddy some issues that kind of, yeah, was not acting properly, to put it quite politely. Now, electronic money institution license, I understood also from FinTech In, it's first of all, it's been seen as a very good part. At the same time, it eats up a lot of costs. I know from Neo Finance, they said about 30% of their costs are all going for obtaining that license. And at the same time, it just covers a very small fragment. So it's about, that segregation. And obviously, an extended version now, NeoPay, a new solution by Neo Finance, for instance, that also was, being able to be published because of e-money institution. How do you look at electronic money institution license? Maybe a couple words on that.
Our platform providers can use two ways of securing that the money flow is being done with in accordance with regulation. So they either can obtain their own like electronic money institution license, and if they operate only in local market in Lithuania, so they can obtain this restricted electronic money institution license. That basically means that we do not require any capital requirements from this company. And the other way of securing this money flows, so company crowdfunding platform operator, it can use and partner with existent electronic money institution or bank and to use their facility of moving money around. But there are possibly other ways of making sure that we protect people's money from some fraud actions or when just the money are not company is misconducting and we actually are at the moment we are in the dialogue with the market with the Ministry of Finance on alternative ways of safeguarding money, so we will see how we end up what it will end up, and the other thing we will see how crowdfunding actually regulation will be, European Union crowdfunding regulation, how discussions will end up, whether there will be some alternative way of ensuring the protection of people's money.
Yeah, I believe Lithuania has a very, because of its regulation and the setup, a very safe market compared to other European countries when it comes to peer-to-peer lending. I think consumers on both sides, so the borrowers as well as investors, have a good infrastructure to invest into peer-to-peer lending here in Lithuania. How safe do you think it is actually in Lithuania, also compared to other European countries?
I hope that it is 100% safe. So it just, I cannot compare it with. In some sense, I can. Still, what we see is that some countries did not introduce any legal framework for crowdfunding or P2P lending market. And if a crisis would hit, some of business models might appear as being much riskier than they were presented to the investors. So I hope and our actually active actions protect market from this wild west, some developments. And we are not like in favor of some business models. So we want to make sure that we invest in long-term perspective. And we want to secure market itself that it won't suffer from the consequences, which will be really hard to just come out, from. So we want our market to develop like more sustainable way. So that's why we do not allow some business models again to develop, being developed here.
Prior to the interview, you told me that you also personally invest into peer-to-peer lending. And how do you in general observe, since you were involved since the very beginning, setting up the legal structure, how do you observe the increasing popularity of peer-to-peer lending in general and Lithuania in particular?
I work in the fintech area. I'm a big fan of different new solutions, and as far as I see any new solution appears and it is available in Lithuania, so I download the app or I just enter my data in a web version. Yeah. So just to feel how the model operates, to understand it more clearly. Regarding the development in P2P market, I think that it gains more popularity in our society, and not only in Lithuania, but overall. It still maybe lacks of some support from state, I would say, because any new, like, you know, market players, not market maybe players, but more in any new financial services, they still need a lot of time to make to secure trust from society. So I think that it's gaining this popularity, but maybe not in the fast way. What else? I hope that again, I'm a true believer that crowdfunding and P2P market is beneficial for our society. So I expect and hope that it will gain more popularity, and it will be developed more sustainable way. Not in sustainable way.
Okay. I know you have time constraints. I have three more questions if I can. First one, so peer-to-peer lending companies, consumer lending companies in Lithuania, the biggest ones, Neo Finance, also known Pasculi Klubas, Finbi and Savi. How regular are you actually in an exchange with them, and how often are you in discussions with them when it comes to pushing new innovations or when there are some requirements on both sides?
Yeah, good question, and it comes in right time, because actually 2 weeks ago we organized the meeting with our market, so in the Ministry of Finance. So the Ministry of Finance people who are responsible for tax issues, who are responsible for regulation, and our people from Central Bank were there, and all the representatives from industry were there. So we discussed the issues that our market faces. So some of them were covered actually in our interview. So the safeguarding of clients' money, and many others. So we decided that we, on most of the topics, we decided to continue the dialogue. So we will be meeting with them in the nearest future regarding specific topics. So the dialogue, I would say, and I truly believe, is really close with the market. We see ourselves not as a watchdog, only like supervisor who comes and on site inspections, and only then company understand what we expect from them. But we are more like a partner who wants the market develop in the right way, and we want to help companies to prevent any of the misbehaving and any losses for our consumers.
Okay. Is there any working groups that you have? Now, I met Vytautas yesterday or 2 days ago, the chairman of the Lithuanian Crowdfunding and Peer-to-Peer Lending Association. Do you have, is this the middleman that you mostly are working closely with, or single meetings with the companies?
Actually, both. So we have the format on more broad sense. We have a fintech working group that unites actually 13 public sector authorities. It's like Bank of Lithuania, Ministry of Finance, it's consumer, Data Protection Authority, and many others. So we meet there periodically with the market participants. participants, and we have this more like specific dialogues or trialogues with market specific market. So there's the one that took place 2 weeks ago was like specifically oriented towards crowdfunding market. So industry presented the developments, how they grow, what are issues again. So we both work with association. And we have this bilateral again dialogues with specific companies if they face some questions or difficulties.
Okay. Yeah, and the last question or the last part is obviously the you mentioned already the European crowdfunding regulation that is about to set in probably next year was also a big topic of the panel discussion where you have been involved yesterday. Maybe in general, what is your view on this upcoming crowdfunding license for European crowdfunding platforms?
Yes, when going outside of European Union, especially in US, I always praise actually European Union for being able to develop a very harmonized financial framework, regulation framework for financial companies, because it allows companies to get the license in one country and operate freely across the borders. And in US, for example, you need to go state by state to obtain licenses there, and you cannot to have license from New York, like a state, and operate in some Oklahoma or Texas. So in the European Union, for example, in payment, electronic money institution, in the banking sector in general, we have this harmonized approach. And in crowdfunding, we do not have yet. So that means that especially for lending-based crowdfunding, it is actually almost impossible to operate cross-border in each of European Union countries, because some countries just does not allow to do that. Some apply some restrictions, some require to obtain additional permission or license. So it's, the market is really fragmented in European Union. So when we will have this EU regulation, and especially I'm glad that it will be a regulation, not directive. So it will want to, be interpreted in different ways. So I hope that it will actually help our market to be more cross-border oriented. And it will, of course, it will help the companies a lot in terms of compliance costs and costs of establishing, and getting license in each of the countries.
I think the benefits are quite clear, having a harmonized pan-European market. I think there's less to argue about. What I'm concerned about, main two critics are actually on one side, the let's say, associations for consumer protections look at it at that the regulation is quite soft and not as straight. And secondly, obviously, that it's an optional license that platforms can obtain. So they have basically the choice if they want to have this license that allows them to operate cross-border or go with the national regulation. And obviously, the threat that comes through this is that it kind of, this optional license undermines established a regulatory framework in certain countries such as Lithuania, as I would see, or in established markets like in the UK. How would you respond to those two criticisms? Because I honestly was surprised yesterday it was mentioned Lithuania would be 95% ready to have that switch, but don't you see also the threat in terms of too soft regulations and that this may be also undermines more established legal environments?
Yeah, as EU regulation is, there might be some critics about that, but still, it the EU regulation not only in crowdfunding area, but overall, it only sees a light when dialogues, trialogues, and many other of this process of trying to fit regulation in to fit needs of different parties in the regulation are being met. So I truly believe that it will reflect. It will be all these concerns will be reflected. Yes, it was said yesterday as Lithuanian national regulation is quite the same as EU regulation. So we do not see any concerns that you just mentioned it and. I must admit, I don't truly thought about that a lot. So yeah, I think that it from our side, at least, as we developed a balanced, as we think, approach to our market in our regulation. So as it is reflected in the EU regulation, I think that we are satisfied with that. Mm.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't want to stress your time anymore. I think we're already a bit over time. Thank you very much, Jekaterina. That was very insightful. And again, much appreciate that I had the chance today to come here and speak with you.
Thank you, Daniel. Pleasure.